In the new book, The Hunting of Hillary, the 40-year campaign to destroy Hillary Clinton, Pulitzer Prize-winning political reporter Michael D'Antonio details the years of lies and insults heaped upon Hillary Clinton as she pursued a life devoted to politics and policy. The worst took the form of sexism and misogyny, much of it barely disguised. As the book makes clear, her achievements have been all the more remarkable for the unique opposition she encountered. The 2016 presidential election can only be understood in the context of the primal and primitive response of those who just couldn't imagine that a woman might lead. The book documents a decades-long campaign of destruction waged against Hillary Clinton and reveals a collection of political actors that include many who remain prominent national figures today. Again, the name of the book is The Hunting of Hillary, and it's a pleasure to welcome Michael D'Antonio to the roundtable this morning. Michael, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Great to be with you.
Let me ask you, just because I kind of brought it up in the introduction, in the sense of the 2016 presidential election and many people just having the trouble in their brains of thinking that a woman may be able to lead this country, and with the news that Joe Biden has selected Kamala Harris as his running mate, and we are seeing the beginning weeks of that combination of what you make of that. Are there parallels to Hillary, to what Kamala Harris is and will be going through?
Well, we've already seen it. We're just days into this new pairing being announced, and the president and his son Eric liked an element or a tweet on Twitter that had a really disgusting term in it, referencing Kamala Harris, the kind of misogynistic, sexist thing that I won't utter. And it was bad enough that the original poster took it down, and the president and his son also removed their endorsements of that tweet. So it didn't take 24 hours for her to be subject to this. And there's just a willingness by people to say things demeaning, derogatory, really, I think, sort of sexually depraved things about women. It just because they dare raise their hand and say, I might be able to lead as well. And I just, there are differences, though. I think there are vast differences between what Harris can expect and what Hillary endured, partly due to Mrs. Clinton being the first and being associated with a president. So there was a kind of pushback against this power couple asserting themselves. And I think that Harris will not have to deal with certain things that Hillary did experience. The other thing being Clinton's long career. So this is a woman who first showed herself to be a public figure in the late 1970s and didn't run for president until 2016. So you can see there's a history that she had that is much different from what Harris is bringing to the race in 2020.
Subtitle of the book is The 40-Year Campaign to Destroy Hillary Clinton. As you say, she came to the spotlight in the late 1970s. But why was there that, even then, that desire to, quote-unquote, destroy her?
Well, part of it was Bill Clinton's magnetic charisma, the fact that he really did burst upon the national scene as the youngest governor in the country. And he was obviously going places. It was clear from the start that this was a new kind of Democrat, a Southerner who could also draw votes from the North. He was such a good communicator. You know, anyone who was around at that time remembers just being gobsmacked by the talent of this young man. And I think, especially when you look at the leadership of Newt Gingrich and the Atwater and Stone crowd in the 1980s, they trembled at the thought of one Clinton gaining prominence, and two were just too many to accommodate in their minds. So I think this effort to attack her was in part to go after him. So and Bill made a lot of mistakes. He promoted his marriage as a twofer for the voters. Well, voters don't elect a couple. They elect a governor or they elect a president. And I think he made lots of mistakes, too. And one of the things that people notice less in this book than I think they should is that I do look at the stumbles that they made, Hillary's own errors, and, you know, the fact that one of the things that really hurt her was being married to this guy who betrayed her.
Yeah.
So she had to not only be herself, but she had to be the wife who experienced this terrible public betrayal, and really more than one public betrayal, and was in effect undermined by the person who was supposed to love her and support her the most. Again, I don't think that many male politicians, I don't remember a single one. Has there been a case of a scandal involving the wife of a prominent male politician whose affair did such damage to him? I think not. But, you know, so in many ways, Mrs. Clinton was this unique figure trying to do something that was, in the end, I think, impossible for her to do.
One of the mysteries of her success has always been that when she wasn't running for president and she was Secretary of State, and then after that, of how popular she was, even as a senator, and asked if people would like to see her as president, everyone said yes. And then she runs, and those numbers go straight down. And the people that you say are hunting for Hillary come out in droves. That's a very bipolar reaction, isn't it?
It's fascinating. And I think you picked up on something very significant. When she was first lady, she often ranked as the most admired person in the world, certainly in America. But when global surveys were made by groups like Gallup and the like, she was always at the top of the most admired list. And as a senator, New Yorkers remember, she was very effective and very popular. And in the Senate itself, her friends included Lindsey Graham. And so these were people who discovered that she did the hard work. She knew, especially in private and in meetings of groups where the press was not present, she was able to connect across party lines, connect across regional and differences, and was very, very good at her job. And as a Secretary of State, she was one of the best in modern memory. But she didn't pose a threat to partisan power. So as long as she was Secretary of State and she wasn't imminently the candidate for president, she was pretty much allowed to do what she did well. But as soon as it became clear in 2011, 2012, that she was the face of the future for the Democratic Party, out came, you know, the crazy attacks related to Benghazi and books that were hardly factual and really devoted to tearing her apart with innuendo, because I think she entered the realm of holding actual elected political power, and that was intolerable to the people who despise her.
You have a chapter in the book entitled We Create Our Own Reality. You start off that chapter with the question, did you know that Hillary Clinton is the Antichrist? That was something that Ryan Zinke, when he was in Congress, a Republican congressman, and then, of course, to the EPA, that is what he said. And you can't really imagine someone saying that about another politician, but there you go. So ultimately, I mean, you talk about this, that this became an industry, an entire industry to get Hillary Clinton and the Clintons.
Well, it did. I mean, it's amazing to think that that was a member of Congress saying that. But if you go back to the time of Whitewater investigations and the impeachment of Bill Clinton, among the leaders of the group that was trying to suggest that the Clintons were covering up the murder of Vince Foster. Now, just to be clear, I'm not saying Vince Foster was murdered. He committed suicide. But there was this conspiracy theory floating around that was helpful politically that said that he was murdered. Well, one of the guys pushing that was Brett Kavanaugh. Right. And the other guy pushing it was George Conway, the famous current critic of the president, whose wife is the counselor to President Trump. So there was, especially back in that day, not only these political efforts made to gin up conspiracy theories. They accused the Clintons of untold numbers of murders. But there was also this, as you say, a kind of industry that evolved where millions of dollars were poured into private investigators, so-called writers. These are people who were really propagandists, who chased every crazy rumor about Bill Clinton you can imagine, including into people's hospital rooms, banging on the doors of parents of a woman who committed suicide because they were sure that it had something to do with Bill Clinton. And these are people who reappear and reappear over the years and are present still, guys like David Bossie or Matt Drudge or, you know, just countless numbers of people who made a living attacking the Clintons. And whenever the Clintons get close to power, they come back to the fore. And literally, you know, you've got Richard Mellon Scaife, now deceased, but in the day, he funded the Arkansas Project, as it was called, with millions of dollars, all devoted to somehow taking down the Clintons through honest means or dishonest means. It just didn't matter.
Bossie rose through the ranks to become a star of the American right, a top advisor to Donald Trump. You wrote, you mentioned a moment ago about Brett Kavanaugh, who was working for Ken Starr at the time. And then Starr goes on to represent Jeffrey Epstein and then joins Trump's impeachment team. I mean, this, as you say, this all seems to all circle back. And of course, George Conway is also known for writing these letters in the Washington Post and editorials in the Washington Post about anti-Trump, and but still managing to go after Hillary.
Well, and he was the coordinator of a group called the Elves, and these were lawyers who were feeding Ken Starr ideas, promoting concepts in the press. George Conway published an article attacking Clinton and calling for his impeachment.
And yeah, you write about Roger Stone, a comparative latecomer to the band that chased Hillary Clinton, but certainly quite vicious.
He's a guy who's promoted some of the most hateful stuff about Hillary Clinton. Again, things that I can't say on the air. And, you know, we all know that he was prominent in the Trump campaign and the recipient of this, I guess it was a commutation of his sentence. I'm not sure exactly how, whether it was a pardon, but before being forced to serve his term on felonies, the president let him go. So there's a lot of money to be made and a lot of benefit that can accrue to someone who was part of this effort to get Hillary Clinton.
In wrapping up our conversation, one of the things that comes out clear is, I mean, they were successful, right? I mean, they ultimately were successful. Even though Hillary got more votes in 2016, Donald Trump is still the president of the United States because of the Electoral College. And it does seem that the hunting for Hillary, they got their prey.
I think eventually they did get their prey. And that word, prey, was something that I had in mind as I considered her during the years that I was researching and writing this book. She really came across in the end to me as a prey animal. And I even think that her experience as prey had an effect on her that was damaging even as she tried to assert herself. So she became more cautious, more what people would call calculating, because I think there were moments when she just didn't know which way to turn, knowing that whatever she did would be distorted and used against her. So this worked on many different levels, and in the end, she was denied the presidency because they did hunt her down and stop her.
The new book is The Hunting of Hillary. It's by Pulitzer Prize-winning political reporter Michael D'Antonio. The book is published by Thomas Dunn Books. Michael, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Hunting for Hillary. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.